right-hand side for Vieira, who'll play it through to Gabriel Jesus, who's in here for Arsenal. Gabriel Jesus to finish it off. Oh, what a way to do it! Gabriel Jesus seals the points for Arsenal. He's back, and he's back with a bang.
Into the penalty area it goes. Gabriel header, and it's into the back of the net. Arsenal take an early lead through Gabriel.
You're listening to the Chronicles of Aguna, the daily Arsenal podcast with me, Harry Simeon.
Hey everybody, how's it going? Welcome back to another live edition of the Chronicles of Aguna, the Arsenal podcast, part of the 90 Min Football family with me, your host, Harry Simeon. It's a happy episode. It's an episode in which I'm going to wax lyrical over the Arsenal, pretending that the last 25 minutes of that game did not happen. I think that's the best way to go about this. It was stressful. It was nerve-wracking at times, and it really never should have been, which makes it perhaps something that we should be looking at through a slightly more negative lens. But Arsenal have got the job done. Mikel Arteta becomes the first Arsenal manager since George Graham back in 87-88 to win consecutive North London derbies at Spurs, in the league, of course, that is. So that tells you how big an achievement this is. Also factor in that despite the Emirates being open for far longer than the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, Arsenal have now won more times at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium than Tottenham have managed at the Emirates Stadium. So a good day overall. I believe the mathematicians are telling me that it's St. Totteringham's Day officially as well. I can't even get my words out tonight. I remember sort of saying to someone as soon as the final whistle went at the stadium today, guys, I just need a bit of time to process this. Like the emotional roller coaster that we went through in that match, the fear of Spurs finding a third goal and an equaliser and what that would have meant for the remainder of our season, but also in terms of just that narrative that you know would have been born out of that. It would have been Arsenal, the bottlers, go to their local rivals, go 3-0 up at halftime and still somehow manage to mess it up. And I always thought that Manchester City were going to go on and win after us. So it wasn't one of those days where I was looking at it and going, well, you know, City are going to drop points here. We absolutely have to win because of that. We just had to win, in my opinion, to stay in the race. And we've done that. And that's all we can control. We can only control our own destiny. Whatever happens elsewhere is out of our hands. Look, we're going to get into the game. We're going to talk through all the key incidents. We're going to discuss some individual performances. I've got some mates who are Tottenham fans. Yeah, just a few, who are adamant that Tottenham Hotspur should have had a penalty in the lead up to Bukayo Saka's goal, Arsenal's second, which came just shy of the half hour mark. We'll get into that as well. We'll break it all down. And I want to take loads of your comments, lots and lots of interaction, please. I am shattered. I am tired. I'm emotionally drained. And I'm desperate to get you guys' thoughts as well, so that I can sort of confirm in my own mind that some of my feelings from sort of watching the game from my vantage point are consistent with maybe what you guys saw as well. I was on the commentary team for BBC London Sport today. I wasn't the main commentator or even the co-commentator. I was kind of the third guy chipping in when necessary. But it was a great day. Massive thanks to BBC London Sport for having me as part of the team. Got to speak to Mikel Arteta after the game. He was obviously delighted. Got to speak to Ange Postecoglou as well. He wasn't so happy, but he was really trying, I think, to say the right things. He didn't want to give his team even any praise, really, for sort of making it close in the end. He wanted to kind of make that point. Well, I can't look at any positives, I think was his response to my question when the outcome was what it was. He's trying to really play up to the fans, you know. And look, listen, we'll go through all of it. We'll dig in and we'll get your takes as well, as I say. But it was a really enjoyable experience for that first sort of 63, 64 minutes. And then I have to say that south stand at Tottenham, which was away to my right, is incredibly loud. And once that gets going and the noise starts coming from them, you can understand why a number of teams in the Premier League this year have gone to Tottenham, actually played quite well in the first half, and then ended up suffering late on in the game. Now, Tottenham are a second half team under Ange Postecoglou. The statistics show that, and sort of some of the research I've done in the lead up to the game confirmed that as well. You've got to give them a bit of praise and a bit of credit for like taking the opportunities that they did to at least make a fist of it late on. But at the same time, I genuinely do and honestly believe that if David Raya doesn't gift them their first goal, none of that happens. If anything, I think Arsenal maybe go on and score a couple more, because it just felt like in the lead up to that David Raya mistake that we were starting to really enjoy ourselves, that we were strutting our stuff, that we were playing intricate passes, that we were using those kind of overloads that we generate in those half spaces. There was 1-2s going on, midfielders making more advanced runs. I don't know. I just felt like that was a real big turning point in the game. Thankfully, it didn't prove fatal. And we'll talk about that, of course, error and lots more throughout the duration of the show. Steven says, we won, but we weren't the best team. We were leggy, sloppy and quite lucky, to be honest. He's also not a fan of David Raya, judging by his next comment. Julian says, evening, Harry, 3 games left. I think we just need to win and see what happens. But I think Arteta has a call to make in the summer with David Raya. Do you? See, I'm going to come on to this in a little bit more detail a little bit later on. But I actually thought that when he made that mistake, we would see him crumble. I started to worry that he was going to start to look really nervy and shaky off the back of that. He'd have known how much this game means to the supporters. And he obviously would have been well aware of the consequences for the title race had we self-destructed at that point. And I looked at David Raya and I thought, after he made that mistake, I thought, this is a real test of your character. This is a real test of whether or not you have the cojones to be an Arsenal goalkeeper. And I thought, after he conceded the goal, he was solid in everything he did. I thought he came out and claimed every cross that Tottenham threw into his vicinity really confidently. I thought he was a lot more risk averse in his passing at that point, as you would be given the game state and maybe after just experiencing something like that. But I looked at David Raya and I thought, right, how are you going to respond to this? The mistake has happened. It's been and gone. Mistakes happen all the time in football. I've seen Edison pass the ball out to attackers. I've seen Alisson do it. You know, these are some of the game's very, very elite goalkeepers. But where I really thought that David Raya showed that he's maybe moved forward and isn't fazed by the fact that he's taken over from Aaron Ramsdale anymore is that in the aftermath of that mistake, he still seemed confident. He still seemed really focused and switched on, and he didn't let it sort of crumble him or crush him, I guess is the right way to put it. But yeah, that was my take on it, but we'll get into it in a little bit more detail. Max says, those mistakes do happen. Raya was flying at every cross towards the end. Couldn't be happier. I said I'll do the Raya thing later. We might as well do it now while we're on the subject, because there's loads and loads of your comments coming through relating to David Raya at the moment. Look, I think what happens is that when the ball goes back to him, you see Thomas Partey drop into that pocket of space. And I remember thinking at the time, don't pass that ball into Thomas Partey. But I could also see Thomas Partey making that movement towards him and showing for it. And so I can understand why there was a temptation on David Raya's part to play that pass. And actually, having watched it back again, I think what happens is that he goes to play that pass and sort of midway through, he realizes that it's probably a bad decision. And he sort of half withdraws from playing the pass, and he kind of half-asses the pass, which is even worse, actually, than trying to just play it with conviction, even if it is the wrong decision. It's that little bit of hesitation, I think, that lands him in trouble there. But as I say, I thought he showed great character afterwards to respond to that. I thought the Arsenal team generally showed really good character in that second period. It was difficult. Tottenham got their goals from a mistake and then from a penalty kick, which I guess you could argue is another mistake on our part. But I don't remember David Raya having to make a save. Like, I don't remember him diving down to his left and tipping one round the post. I don't remember him scrambling back and clipping one over the top of the crossbar. Like, I don't remember him doing any of that. So this idea that Tottenham Hotspur really had our backs up against the wall, I actually think when you watch the game back tomorrow, which I will do with a calmer head, I'll probably feel quite differently about how we defended in the latter stages of that game. And look, I've just brought up the statistics in front of me just to make sure that I'm not going mad. Tottenham Hotspur only managed 2 attempts on target. One of them would have been Romero's goal. So we defended really resiliently, really resolutely, and we limited Tottenham. Despite all the noise coming from the South Stand, we limited Tottenham Hotspur to very, very little. And overall, it was a pretty good defensive display. Angel Hernandez says, would you make the move permanent, Harry, for Raya? I think I would, because I think overall, you know, he's been much improved after a shaky start to life at Arsenal. He's probably going to win the Golden Glove this season. And I know that's something that is reflective of Arsenal's defence as a collective unit, more so than just the goalkeeper. You know, you need all of those parts to be in place for you to win that trophy, but or that award. But yeah, I think this is a done deal. It's happening. So I don't see that much point really in spending a load of time debating and discussing whether or not it should happen. If Arsenal go on and win the Premier League, which they might not, but if they do, I suspect that £27 million, which is what we've agreed to pay Brentford for him, is going to look like a really, really good deal. So, yeah. Anyway, we'll move on from the David Raya chat for now. Remember, if you're watching us on YouTube, please do leave a like on the video. It really, really does help me. And I mentioned to you guys in the build-up to the Spurs game that we've got something coming up, that we're making a big, big change behind the scenes, that the Chronicles of Aguna is going to get a bit of a lift off very, very soon. And so I need you guys to help me in any way that you can. And likes, which don't cost a thing, are a great way of helping me. Subscribing to the channel also really, really helps. And if you prefer to take our content in while you're walking the dog or walking to the shop or on your morning run or in the car, remember, the Chronicles of Aguna is available on all major podcast stores, as well as right here on YouTube, from which we live stream. Please do check it out. Okay, let's move on. Well, we've done the Raya stuff. Let's go back to what I normally start with, which is the team selection. I thought Mikel Arteta was absolutely spot on to pick the exact same team that comfortably dispatched of Chelsea earlier in the week. Partey, Rice and Odegaard is the midfield that we like, that we want, that we love. And I thought maybe there was a bit of a drop off in the level late on in the game. I thought Rice and Partey in particular looked like they were just running out of steam. But listen, it happens. You know, we've played a lot of games. A lot was made of the fact that Tottenham in the lead up to this game had 2 weeks rest, whereas we obviously had played a load of games in the lead up to this. And I was not sure whether momentum would come out on top or if instead the sort of freshness would come out on top. And as it happened, the momentum got us into a 3-goal lead. And when we did run out of steam towards the end of the game, luckily we'd done just about enough to make sure that that wasn't costly for us. Because a lot of the mistakes that you see, they come from tiredness. And that might not always be physical. It might be mentally as well. Sometimes you can be mentally tired. You can make bad decisions. I think that's maybe what happened with Declan Rice. You know, Declan Rice conceding that penalty the way he did, he sort of just got caught completely by surprise when Ben Davis came steaming in there. He thought he had the time to clear it. He thought he had the time to let it drop and clear it. And he just wasn't able to do so. A big thank you to Pointless Gamo, says, listen to the commentary today. Harry, thought you were class. Thank you, mate. Really, really appreciate it. Chris Carrick says, how are you still awake, Harry? You're like the James Brown of Arsenal content creators. Thank you, mate. I was up this morning at 4 a.m. Went into TalkSport, did the paper review on the morning breakfast show with the brilliant Natalie Sawyer and Tony Cascarino, came home, thought about having a couple of hours sleep before heading to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, but my kids just weren't having it. They were making a right racket, couldn't get to sleep. Alarm went off, jumped in a cab, went to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, did all the job there and sort of got to take in the game as well, for which I'm extremely grateful. And then stood around Tottenham High Road, hoping that nobody would spot me whilst trying to get an Uber, which proved a really difficult task. Got one in the end. Came home, caught the second half of Man City, Nottingham Forest. Turned it off after Haaland scored. We've just been doing the 90-minute stream, and now we are here. Okay, so team selection, happy with that. All good. No complaints on that. Just in terms of the game management, this is a really good point from Robert, because I actually said this in my commentary today. He said, I thought Mikel might have brought Jorginho on in place of Martin Odegaard to really shore the midfield up. Anyway, good resilience and the team management got us through. I mentioned this in my commentary, that I felt like in the latter stages of that second half, both Rice and Partey were struggling, but they were both so important that I probably wouldn't have taken either of them off. But maybe we needed a bit of reinforcement in there. Maybe we needed someone to go in there and support them a little bit. And obviously Martin Odegaard is a much more forward-thinking player, likes to pick up the ball in much more advanced areas, whereas Jorginho would quite happily sit in that kind of deep-lying midfield position, help you move the ball through the lines, help you get a foot on it, slow things down, dictate the tempo. So I agree with you, but I just wonder if Mikel Arteta thought that because Spurs had made a few changes, Richarlison was really, really lively when he came on. I wondered if Mikel Arteta thought that in those spaces just in front of the back four, Jorginho might have been overrun. Because I think for all his great performances in an Arsenal shirt, we have seen a few occasions where that's happened as well. Let's start off by talking about the first goal. I say let's start off. We've been going for 16 and a half minutes, but let's turn our attention to the first goal. And I can't show you the goals on the screen, because if I do that, I get done for copyright strike. But please do like the video anyway, despite my inability to show you the goals themselves. But what I'm going to do, if you just bear with me a second, is I'm going to bring them up on my screen so that I can kind of talk you through them as I saw them. Because I think there's a few really interesting points to highlight on each of the Arsenal goals today. We'll also talk about the ones we conceded as well. Let's start off with the Højbjerg one. So it's a Bukayo Saka corner that comes in. And Arsenal, you look at Arsenal and the way that they attack set pieces now, there's a few different routines I've noticed that Nicolas Jova likes to rotate between. And I'm sure those routines are tweaked and adjusted in the lead up to big games based on maybe the habits of the opposition. But it was clear going into this game that Tottenham have an issue defending these types of balls. And it's clear, in my opinion, that Guillermo Vicario is not the greatest goalkeeper in terms of commanding the area immediately in front of his goal. So I'm talking about sort of the width of his goal and maybe not even, I'm not even talking about the 6 yard box, maybe the first 3-4 yards of that. He's not the strongest there. And I'll tell you when that occurred to me, it was back when they played Everton at Goodison Park, and Everton did a really, really good job of putting blockers on him, crowding out that area in and around him and whipping balls to the area sort of right underneath the crossbar and just looking to get anything on the end of it. And that's what Arsenal did again. That movement from back post to front and the fact that we do it with 3 or 4 giants is really, really impactful. And despite an Arsenal player not getting the final touch on the first goal, the blocking, the leaning, the aggression that we show in terms of the way we kind of want to get into those areas and make sure that we're close enough to the ball to make something happen is what forces Pierre-Emil Højbjerg to make that mistake. And it comes off the top of his head. He's off balance and into the back of the net it goes, beats Guillermo Vicario at the near post. I love Bukayo Saka's shithousery today, by the way. He loved giving it to the Spurs fans every time that he was involved in a goal. There was a free kick from Tottenham in the first half that almost resulted in an equaliser not too long after Arsenal found the breakthrough. I think it was Maddison's delivery into the far post. And there was Romero coming in and he went to head it in towards that near post area. Thomas Partey, if you watch that back, I think does just about enough. He's just leaning into Romero enough to put him off balance, which means he's kind of falling backwards and therefore he's not able to get the contact on the header that he wants in terms of keeping it just inside the post. Then Tottenham had a moment which I think was probably the most pivotal moment in this game. I felt like although we were a goal to the good at this point, We weren't really getting the ball down and playing much. We were pinned back territorially quite a lot of the time. We weren't able to get up the pitch much. And you felt like Tottenham were just starting to get going and play the Ange ball that they've obviously been playing for a lot of this season. You always felt that Arsenal had something in them on the break, and you always glanced up and looked at that Tottenham backline. You'd see how high up they were and you'd think, bloody hell, you know, there's something in that for us if we can play through the press and we can get on our bike, or we can go that little bit longer up to Kai Havertz, an option that he gives you that Gabriel Jesus, for me, just doesn't. We'll talk Havertz in a bit. But this was the, what I'm about to talk about now, was the Mickey van der Ven disallowed goal. Now, it does come off a couple of Arsenal players, which a lot of Tottenham fans are moaning about, before it ends up with Mickey van der Ven. But once we had the VAR check, it became apparent immediately that Mickey van der Ven, when I think it was Pedro Porro had the initial shot, was standing in an offside position. He was clearly beyond the two Arsenal centre-halves. There wasn't much in it, but the VAR got the lines out and they could see instantly that he was in an offside position. Michael Oliver signalled that the goal had been disallowed, and you felt like the air had come out of the Tottenham Hotspur crowd. Gabriel's reaction to that at the time, I thought, was massive, because what it kind of said to all the Arsenal players was, guys, listen, we've got away with that. We've bloody got away with that. That's our lifeline. We've been given the opportunity because that goal has been disallowed, chalked off, whatever, however you want to put it. Make sure that we take this opportunity now. Make sure that we don't switch off again and we go again. It's one of those where it's difficult to like pinpoint anybody in particular who's to blame. I think Arsenal get out quite well to Pedro Porro, hence why they get the block on the shot. Takes a couple of ricochets and it finds its way to Mickey van der Ven. Good finish from the centre-half, to be fair to him, but obviously it didn't count. Then there was a bit of controversy in the lead-up to Bukayo Saka's second goal. Now, this was around about the 25th, 26th minute. And Tottenham Hotspur felt that they should have had a penalty for a Leandro Trossard foul, they say, on Dejan Kulusevski. They then appealed for another one seconds after, when James Maddison hit the ground as Declan Rice made a challenge on him. Look, I've watched this back over and over and over again, and I'm sorry, I can't see enough contact there for the VAR to step in, intervene, and say penalty. Like, it's as simple as that. I've heard some people saying, well, had Michael Oliver given it, would the VAR have overturned it? Don't know. And to be honest with you, that's irrelevant, because Michael Oliver didn't give it. He was in a great position. He clearly didn't see the contact. And I think where Leandro Trossard saves himself here is that he doesn't stick a leg out. He doesn't dangle a leg out. It isn't a clumsy challenge. It isn't the challenge of a big gangly centre forward. For example, if that was Kai Havertz, I think the optics of it are really different and it looks a lot worse. And maybe as a referee, you're pointing to the spot. Whereas in Leandro Trossard's case, he's quite slight. He's quite small. He doesn't dangle out a leg. He makes it very, very clear with his actions that he's not making a challenge. So if there's a coming together in the crossing of paths of those two players, then you have to ask yourself the question, if it's a foul, football is a contact sport after all, and is it worthy of the VAR stepping in, intervening and overturning it? And my answer is no. So I thought that was the correct decision. I can understand why the Tottenham fans inside the ground were incensed, because you don't get the benefit of watching it over and over again. You don't get the benefit of analysing it. All they've seen is Dejan Kulusevski go down. And listen, we'd appeal for it if it was the other way around. But I think in hindsight, and having sort of looked back at all of the decisions, that one was right. And I think in the end, they got them all right. If I were a Tottenham fan and I was to be pissed off about anything today, it would be probably about the fact that maybe Takehiro Tomiyasu probably could have gone in the book, and that Michael Oliver was really reluctant to get his card out and show it to the Japanese international defender. And the other thing I'd probably point out is the penalty that Tottenham did get. How is Michael Oliver not seeing that in real time? And that kind of plays into Ange Postecoglou's point after the game, when he said the games aren't being officiated from here anymore. Get that. I understand that. But this is a wider debate and discussion about VAR that I don't wish to go into again. After that controversy, Arsenal broke forward. The ball was played into Kai Havertz. He got the ball. He was about 10 yards shy of the halfway line. He has a glance up and he spots Bukayo Saka in all sorts of space. And he drops a beautiful pass over the top of Ben Davis. And Bukayo Saka's got the time and the freedom to bring it down, check inside onto that left foot, as he loves to do, and then just slot it into the bottom corner past Guillermo Vicario. And he wheels away in celebration. I must admit, when Bukayo Saka received that ball, I was thinking, just hit it with your right. Just hit it low and hard and back across the goal. Why run the risk of potentially being dispossessed by trying to cut in? It was almost like Arjen Robben-esque, where you knew what he was going to do. Everybody in the stadium knew what he was thinking and what he had in mind, but nobody could stop it. Nobody could prevent him from doing so. And he put it away. Arsenal 2-0, and you felt that sucked the life out of Tottenham. And then, of course, the third goal comes, which again is another set piece. I'm just watching the replay again of that Van de Ven incident. I honestly think, if anything, he's brushed the back of his foot, brushed it ever so softly. And I don't blame a VAR for not stepping in and sort of making a big deal out of that. If we didn't get the penalty against Bayern Munich and everybody was telling us to be quiet about it when Bukayo Saka went down, how on earth are we going mad about this? Jesus. Arsenal's third goal came 38 minutes. Sorry, I had to check my notes there. And it was another set piece. And again, it was the classic land of the Giants. Shift them from the back post to the front post, cause all sorts of chaos. And again, put it in the area that Guillermo Vicario looks most uncomfortable in. And if you watch this goal back again, Kai Havertz begins wide of the far post. He's actually outside the width of the six-yard box. That's how far wide of the far post he is. And he manages to dance his way through and get to the near post before heading in from close range. Vicario, no chance making the save. You know, really, really difficult for the keeper when it comes at point-blank range like that. But yeah, Arsenal, 3-0, and you're thinking, cruising, happy days, we are on our way. Second half begins, and I thought we looked pretty comfortable. As I say, I thought we started to strut our stuff. We started to look confident. And you started to get the feeling that if anybody was going to get the fourth goal in this game, it was going to be us, not them, until up stepped David Raya. Now, we've talked about the mistake. I'm not going to go over it again. But that was a massive momentum swinger. You know, at 3-1, I still felt really, really comfortable. I didn't really start to feel any major concern until the second goal went in. And even then, again, you know, when I watch it back, I think I'll look at it and think, bloody hell, why was I so nervous? Actually, we were a lot more comfortable than maybe it felt at the time. But the nerves kick in. You know, that's just how it goes when you're going through the mill as a football fan, when you're feeling those moments in sort of real life. That's how it is. That's how it is. So you can understand why people were feeling nervous at the time. But you know, we did really gift them a couple of cheap goals, didn't we? I don't know what Romero was even doing in that position, by the way, to receive the ball from David Raya, and he slotted it home. We talked about the mistake already. Don't want to go over it again. What I do want to talk about is the penalty that we conceded, which made it really bloody nervy towards the end of the game. Declan Rice making a rare mistake, you have to say. That penalty was given on around about 85, 86 minutes. It was the 87th minute by the time Heung-min Son converted it. Michael Oliver, look, I'm an Arsenal fan, so obviously I don't want him to give that as a penalty. But how Michael Oliver, down on the pitch, has decided that that is not a spot kick is beyond me. It is beyond me. I was in the front few rows of the upper tier. That's where we were stationed on BBC Radio London today. And I could see straight away, Bradley Allen, who was on COCOMs, could see straight away that that was a penalty kick, that Declan Rice had kicked through Ben Davis. I suppose if you're going to kick someone through the backside, it probably should be a Tottenham Hotspur player if you're wanting to establish yourself as an Arsenal hero. But that was a stonewall penalty. We could have no complaints about that. And it made the end really, really nervy. There was 3 minutes of normal time to go, but obviously there was 6 added on at the end. I thought we managed that period of added time really, really well. We were camped on the edge of our box. We dealt with all the crosses that came in. David Raya made a few really big claims, which I really appreciated. We won ourselves a few free kicks further up the pitch. And in the end, we got the job done and we got over the line. But my God, it was a lot nervier than it needed to be. But the significance of this result, just zoom out for a second, right? Arsenal, as I mentioned earlier, hadn't won away at Tottenham in the league consecutively since 87 and 88, I beg your pardon. Those were the 2 years, 87 and 88. It's not easy to do. Not even Arsene Wenger managed to win consecutive away North London derbies with the great teams that he had. So if you just zoom out for a minute and look at what an achievement that is for Mikel Arteta's young side, who are still developing, who are still growing, that's incredible. And it's something we should be really, really proud of. The title race, I don't know how that's going to go. And I don't want to get into this position where I am, having nightmares and stressing and like over-obsessing about what Manchester City do or the fact that Chris Wood probably should have scored for Nottingham Forest today when it was 1-0 to Manchester City. Like, I don't want to obsess over that. Well, I keep saying it's really, really important that we enjoy the ride. Today was a part of that ride. And although we didn't enjoy it for the last 25 minutes, we can enjoy the fact that we've won a North London derby at Tottenham. We can enjoy the fact that we at least for now go back to the top of the league. We can enjoy the fact that we're right in the thick of this race. And if it goes our way, we are going to bloody love it. If it doesn't, then as long as we've done our job, we can look back on this season with pride and say we took another step. Because again, not only were we competitive, which shows that we maintained the basics of where we were last season, but that we were competitive for longer, which shows a sign of progress, but also that we were competitive whilst balancing that with UEFA Champions League football, which is what you really need to be doing if you're a top, top side. So let's just see how it goes. Let's just see how it pans out. Let's not obsess over what Manchester City are doing. Let's enjoy our games. Let's get the results that we need and we'll see where we are. Gunner329 in the chat says, not easy to beat 115 charges FC. Look, we don't know what's going to happen with that. We don't know what the details are of that. We don't really understand the complexities of this case because they've not been made public. So it's really, really difficult. But the standards that Manchester City have set, regardless of how they got there, if we just park that bit for a second, are just incredible. And that's why I get annoyed when I hear people call teams bottle jobs. Even Liverpool, right? I heard somebody yesterday say Liverpool are bottle jobs. No, they're not. Liverpool are not bottle jobs. Liverpool just leveled out at the end of the season. They were punching above their weight, I think, at points this season. And over the course of the distance, they weren't able to last. It's like if you put, half a tank of petrol, but you try and go further than where that will carry you and your car runs out of petrol, do you blame the car? Or do you blame the idiot that didn't put enough petrol in? Or wasn't there enough petrol available to that idiot, which is why the car broke down? I realize that's not a great analogy. The point is, if you put the petrol in and you put everything that was available and it wasn't enough, is that anyone's fault? No. The standards that City have set, that's a terrible analogy. I wish I could scrap that, but it's live. I can't. The point here is that Arsenal in 2024 have won every game bar two. One of them was a draw at Manchester City, which is a very respectable result. And the other one was a defeat at home to Aston Villa. We've set some incredible standards ourselves. And so if we miss out on the Premier League title, what does that tell you about the standards that Pep Guardiola and Manchester City have set? Yes, I realise, AJ, that was a terrible analogy. Sorry. What I should have said was, if there isn't enough petrol in the car, and how do you get to that destination? You can't, right? In theory, unless you start peeing in the tank. Does that work? I don't know. Anyway, that's kind of everything from me. I'm interested to get some of your takes, some of your thoughts. If you've got any questions, please do drop them in the chat. We'll do another sort of 10 minutes or so here live on the Chronicles of Acuna channel. If I could just remind you one more time, leave a like on the video if you haven't done so already. Subscribe to the channel if you haven't done so already. Kai Havertz, got to talk about Kai Havertz while you get your questions in. Got to talk about the centre halves as well, actually. We'll start with Kai Havertz. Just what a performance. I mean, outstanding in every sense of the word. Offensively, scores you a goal, provides a blinding assist for Bukayo Saka's goal. Defensively, puts loads of work in, holds the ball up for you, helps you defend set pieces, drops back into midfield and gets involved in those duels as well. Outstanding performance from him again. Really, really enjoying his growth and enjoying the role that he's playing in his team. And it's amazing what a bit of confidence can do for you and the right environment, which he obviously feels like he's in at Arsenal in comparison to maybe what he was feeling and experiencing at Chelsea. The centre-backs today, again, absolutely immense, physically dominant, comfortable in possession of the ball. Just wonderful, wonderful, wonderful performance from both Gabriel and Saliba today. I thought Ben White was really good. I thought Tomiyasu was good for the most part as well. I thought Trossard was a little bit slack in some of the things that he did in possession in the first half, especially. Felt like he gave the ball away cheaply on a couple of occasions in dangerous areas because he just took too long on it and couldn't make his mind up what his next move was going to be. Partey was really good for a long part of the game, and then I thought ran out of steam towards the end. Rice, the same. Odegaard, brilliant captain's display, workmanlike, but also really effective when in possession as well. I've touched on Trossard. Saka obviously whips in the corner for the first goal, scores the second, makes a real telling contribution just at the point where people were maybe starting to talk about him again. And then, of course, I've already mentioned Kai Havertz. Twerk for Work says, those are the Dorfogian standards, guys. Absolutely. Mickey Morris says, never been happier to catch you live for a change. And then there were two in the title race. As they say in my part of the woods, if a red, we in a the red. Have I said that right? the team that Arteta built, can we dream? I think that was meant to be Jamaican, right? Yeah, just looking at the flag at the end of your comment. If a red, we in a the red. I hope I've not butchered that too much. Demi Ola says, enough petrol, but a puncture in your fuel pump. Thank you for the very, very kind donation to the channel. AJ Envoy, what did you make of Tomiyasu's and Partey's performance? I kind of touched on that just a second ago, so I won't go over that again, but I thought both were good up to a certain point, and then I think a bit of fatigue maybe kicked in for both of those guys. But I was thinking about it, like the left back thing. I was like, do you bring on another left back? And then I thought to myself, and this was particularly when Brennan Johnson came on, I was thinking to myself, do you bring on another left back? And I thought, but who? Kivior doesn't really look comfortable when he's dragged out into those 1v1 situations, which is something that Tomiyasu was going to have to deal with. And Zinchenko is definitely not someone I want to be bringing on at that point in a game like that. So I think Mikel Arteta kind of had to stick with Tomiyasu. And I think he pulled Gabriel Martinelli over around about that point. And I think he probably said to him, look, Gabby, we need you here to really put in a shift in and support and help Tomiyasu because he is running out of steam. And to be fair to Gabriel Martinelli, he done a great job for the team. Galvo says, does it give you any encouragement, the fact that Forest created a lot today in the wide channels against City, who looked a bit off it? Not really. You know, we've talked about Arsenal on occasions this year, getting results when they didn't really look at their best. That's just what champions do. And Manchester City have shown that they can do that over and over again for a number of years now. The thing is, guys, is that it's out of our hands. So, like, there's a part of me that looks at City and thinks, you're not as good as you were before. But then I look at the points tally that they're on course to achieve, which is probably going to be more than they managed last season. And I think, well, is that actually true? I'm protecting my emotions. Like, I don't want to look at Man City every week and obsess over them. And it's really difficult not to when you're in the thick of a title race with them. I get that. But yeah, I'm trying I'm trying not to go down that road and down that path. You look at Fulham, that could be a potential banana skin for them. You look at that Tottenham game. I don't know what to make of that Tottenham game. You know, everybody I spoke to, of a kind of Tottenham persuasion at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium today said, no, there's no way that under Big Ange, they would roll over against City and not give it a go. They'd be desperate to show themselves against a side that are competing for the title. I just find that really hard to believe that there wouldn't be a little something in the air that night if beating Manchester City meant handing the title to Arsenal. You know, and that can be something as you know, as basic as maybe just the fans not being quite on it because they don't really want to celebrate something they know will gift us a Premier League title. And that could have an impact on the atmosphere, which can then have a knock-on effect on the game. So, yeah, I just find it really hard to believe that Tottenham are gonna go out there and perform to their maximum and potentially scupper Manchester City's chances. But look, we're in it right until the end. We just got to keep going and see what happens. Okay, let's see what else we've got. Canterbury Gunis says, just can't see City dropping any more points. Stop getting your hopes up. Maybe that's the right way to be. But no, no, you got to believe. Come on, you got to believe. You got to believe. Robbie says, Harry, similar to your statement, that's what champions do. That's what our boys do. He also goes on to say, we are on the up. Stay the course and we just do what we do. Absolutely. Just one final ask for likes, guys, on the YouTube video. If you haven't done so already, please, it really does help. Subscribe to the channel if you're brand new as well. Rahan, I beg your pardon, says, we lost possession a lot throughout the game. Trossard got caught a few times in the first half. Tomiyasu looked a bit too excited, and Odegaard was misplacing passes. That pass from Odegaard that he played across the midfield, I couldn't believe what I was seeing there. Like, it was one of those, I don't know if any of you played growing up FIFA Pro Evo. I don't play these things anymore because I'm a grown up. That's what I tell my wife. But the amount of times on those games that I sort of knew that I shouldn't play a pass or knew that I shouldn't make a slide tackle, but the temptation had me pressing the button anyway and then making a stupid, silly mistake that would cost me in the game. It just happened to me so many times. And I liken that Odegaard pass and the Raya pass, which also went badly wrong that time we were punished, to moments like that where in your head you know something's not right. Maybe it's tiredness, maybe it's fatigue. I don't know what it is, but there's something in your brain telling you, no, there's like an alert that kicks in, but you can't stop yourself from doing it in time to prevent the mistake. I don't know. Odrudek says, Harry, do you think we need a player to replace Odegaard for rotation purposes? In an ideal world, yes. The problem is Martin Odegaard's don't grow on trees. He's a fantastic talent and it's not easy to find players of that ability, of that sophistication, of that tactical sort of awareness that Martin Odegaard clearly has. The fact that he's able to sort of carry out Mikel's instructions on the pitch is really, really powerful for us. In an ideal world, there's a lot of players that we'd be able to rotate people in for, but it's not that easy. It's not that easy. And listen, we saw a few mistakes from Arsenal players today. Fortunately, we were able to get the result anyway. Mistakes happen. I did ask Mikel Arteta, do you know what? Can I play it? Hold on. Where is it? One second. Let me see if I can find it. I did ask Mikel Arteta after the game. I'm just going to play it through my microphone. I haven't got time to. Hold on a second. One second. Here we go. Let me know if you should be able to hear it. Hold on.
Mikel, are you hoping that's all the individual errors out of the way now between now and the end of the season?
I hope so. But if they come more and you cannot control that in football, hopefully the reaction is like this and we are more mature and we are more prepared.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So Mikel Arteta there speaking to us after the game. I got a cheeky question in about the individual errors. He raised them as individual errors himself prior to me asking that. And I just... like it's when you're asking the last question, it's difficult, right? Because all the things that you want to ask have already been asked. So you got to come up with something else. And I just thought I'd make a bit of a joke out of that comment and see how he responded. And yeah, I think we can all agree there were individual errors. We can all agree that there were moments of sloppiness and there were things that we could have done a lot better. But I also think that the fact that when those errors happened, there wasn't any finger pointing. There wasn't any sulking. There wasn't any sort of dropping of heads. It was literally, no, we are going to deal with this together as a team, as a unit. And that's really, really important. When David Raya made the mistake, he put his hand up immediately and sort of walked out towards his centre backs and said, come on, let's get on with this. Let's make sure that we... obviously, I don't know exactly what he said word for word, but that's the message he was trying to put across. It was clear to see. When Declan Rice gave away the penalty, it was the same thing. It was show some heart. You could see him before we restarted the game, beating his chest on the halfway line, saying, show some heart, guys. Come on, we've got this. We can deal with this. We can live with this. And we did. We got there. And that's why you saw celebrations after the game, because even in a difficult moment, even away from home, up against it, against the Tottenham Hotspur side, being wheeled on by a huge set of supporters in that south stand, which I maintain is an incredible stand, and I wish we had one like that at the Emirates. Anyway, don't want to give him too much praise. I think the fact that we came through it, it'll only make us stronger. And it's a bit of a warning sign. It's a bit of a reality check. And sometimes you need those along the way. Okay. I am going to leave it there. Thank you all so, so, so much. I've been up since 4 a.m. It's now 9 p.m. UK time. I'm going to go and pour myself a nice glass of red wine. Don't need any of that white stuff. Red wine. I'm going to sit on the sofa. I'm going to start to watch the game back. I'll probably fall asleep and pick up the rest of it tomorrow. But another busy day coming up tomorrow. So I want to get my rest and shut eye. Thank you all so, so much. As always, one more ask, one more plug for the likes on the YouTube stream. There are loads of you watching with us and you have been throughout. Please do leave a like on the video. Subscribe to the channel if your brand's spanking you. And I will see you all on the next episode. Until then, take care of yourselves and have a great day. Up the Arsenal, North London. It's red.